Hi everyone, welcome to the Max Show. I'm your host Jeff Gamma, and if you've been hanging around for the pre-show, you're probably like, "Holy forking shirtballs! What took them so long?" We're prima donnas. That's that's just it. Anyhow, but we're here. So hey everyone, and happy Friday. And part of what makes it a happy Friday is getting to hang out with wonderfully cool people and really good friends, and here they are. So yes, Marty, how's it going?
Son's wedding was 6 days ago. So I am still in recovery mode,
This checks out.
taking long naps, spending a lot of time in bed asleep. I have one task today, and that's to get the deep dish pizza pans off the kitchen table and all the way up in the shelf. Once that's done, my day's over with.
I thought that
Nice.
task was to get out of bed, and you already completed
Oh yeah.
it.
Well, I mean, so clearly you're already winning it today because you're
Yes.
up, you're hanging out here, and there's a light at the end of your task list for the day.
Yeah, and I'll probably watch a slasher movie after that, and then the Cubs versus the Sox, which is the crosstown classic in Chicago.
Yeah, it's
Oh,
big time
fun.
this weekend in the South Side.
Nice. So which team needs to win or should
Cubs.
win?
Cubs.
Okay.
My dad was a South Sider, Chicago's White Sox, like Pope Leo, but I'm hoping to disappoint Pope Leo for a second time in my life.
Pope Leo is a White Sox fan. He
Yeah.
was born, raised, and grew up in that area.
So a video popped up in, I think it was my Facebook feed, and it was like weird facts about baseball. And one of them was about the Cubs and the team's original name. And it was like the whales or something.
It was like 1870s. This is their 150th anniversary. They were a baseball team since 1876.
Wow. Well, apparently, at least according to this little video that I saw, that original logo that they used with the whale on it, there's a contingent of people that lament the fact that that's not what's used today.
Well, they're the Cubs.
Hey, Jeff, with all your trips to Chicago, have you ever been to Wrigley?
No, I have not.
I gotta look and see if they're gonna. Let's check the schedule.
They're not in during Max Stock
Oh, crap.
this
Even
season. So
before?
next time. No, well, like Tuesday.
Dang it. I would love to take you to Wrigley. You'd love it.
I'm
Even though
sure I
you don't like
would.
to.
It's I really enjoy going to baseball games.
Yeah, you went to Coors Field.
I've been to Coors Field several times, and every time I have a wonderful experience. And it's like this really great social event, and there just happens to be this baseball game going on at the same time.
There's a show on stage as well. As
As
Yeah.
we've now derailed the Mac show here.
Yeah, but this week in sports trivia, with all the sports trivia information that Jeff Gamet knows, which also means this was
The
the
show's
first and
very
last
short.
episode of it, and yeah, it was only a few minutes long.
Okay,
Yeah. But Mr. Trivia Knowledge himself, our own walking Wikipedia, Dave, how are you?
don't know if I'd go that far, but
Not too late, we just did.
Chicago history. It never leaves my head because that's when it happens when you grow up here. I'm doing great. It's Friday. Well, it's a little colder today. I was just out and I'm wearing a jacket.
You
I didn't think I
are.
was going to be able to be
Same
in a
here.
t-shirt again. But doing great. And yeah, we had some good stuff on InTouch.iOS. I got to get our, we I did do an interview with Don McAllister, and he talked about his new app, the Wedding Player. So mm-hmm. we got to get that out, and a good show yesterday. So, so I know people here know Don very well. So it was a great interview, and I don't know what am I doing, but it's just this thing called work gets in the way, you know, trying to get stuff
right.
So, yeah. Annoying. So. Yeah. So, yeah. But we're going to get that out tonight. I hope everybody here at the Mac show at British Tech Network can see it. Check it out. It was good. I was very impressed with him.
Don is an awesome guy.
He is. Yes.
Yeah. That he is. Yeah.
All right, Dave, since you're our Chicago trivia master, I'm going to tie it together for us because you're in Chicago mm-hmm. And you know, it's no secret that I have moved outside of downtown Boulder. So basically next door. I'm in Longmont right now.
Basically next door.
Well, you know, when you're looking at the communities here, yeah, that's just how it works. So Longmont has a very, very tight connection to Chicago.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, so it would have been after the Chicago Fire.
Oh,
and there
1871.
Yeah, so there were a bunch, but yeah, I can't remember the exact year, but it's definitely after the fire. There was a contingent of businessmen in Chicago that were looking for a colony community location, and Colorado was that was just a thing that was happening here, and so they came out and looked at like three or four locations, and chose Longmont. So this was the Chicago colony. And so they came up with a master plan for the town, and you know, all the roads, and did this whole thing where they had like really strict regulations for everyone that came out, so that it could be a very well controlled community. Yeah, not like we are in charge of the world, but like these are the guidelines for how everything operates in this community. And you know, they plotted out the roads and everything. And so, Dave, my place is just outside the southeast corner of the original township. Yeah. And yeah, you know, so they did the whole thing with building the power plant, and yeah, so. So yeah, this is Chicago. I forgot the exact name. Chicago Colony, Chicago Colorado Colony, yep. Something like that. And so a bunch of the streets in that original core downtown area, they're named after the group of people that coordinated the original town design, now city design. So there you go.
Did not know that.
It's I practically live in Chicago.
Practically. Yeah.
Practically. Yes. And and Marty, you found the link or the info for this. Do you mind dropping it into the live chat so everyone else can see it too?
Well, I don't know if it's a link. It's just stuff that I copied and pasted, but
that's good enough.
Throw that. Okay.
That's
ChatGPT. And yeah, I think that there's a whole page on the City of Longmont government website that details that history of the original township for the Chicago Colorado Colony. And yeah, if you violated the regulations that they had set up, you could actually lose your land because it was like you got this plot of land for a super great price, but you had to follow the guidelines. So, anyhow, there you go.
Patrice looks excited.
Very.
So Patrice, the short version is, when Dave flew out from Chicago back in January, he flew from Chicago to Chicago, essentially.
All right. You told me that when I was there.
Well,
yeah, exactly. Why did you leave?
I didn't know this yet. It's something I learned after you left.
Oh, okay.
But I know now. Yeah.
Right, so do I.
There you go. More trivia that you'll be able to throw around.
It's exciting.
Yeah, right? And everyone outside the U.S., probably in the U.S., it's like, why are you telling us this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about Max.
Yeah, we live in houses older than your city. So, yeah. Anyhow, yeah, we should talk about some Apple stuff. But first, Apple Watch bands. The new Pride bands are out. We've mentioned it. And we have people that have them right now.
Yes.
So Dave, Patrice, both of you have the band. And
nice. Bought it.
So cool. I have not picked up one yet. But in my defense, apparently I don't even have time to finish my laundry anymore.
Here's last year's. I have that one too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Nice. So anyhow.
I wish it was this. I wanted the solo, the braided solo loop. They went back to this Velcro one.
Yeah.
Next
year.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're right. Maybe they're going to alternate styles.
It's nano robots that automatically adjust.
Right. Right. You just tell the S lady, put on my watch, and the little nanobots crawl up. Yeah, they just crawl up your arm and interlock their little nano legs.
Yeah.
To make a watch band for you.
Yeah. And it can change colors.
What could possibly go wrong? Yeah. Anyhow, so that's the watch band. Patrice, you have a PSA.
I have a PSA. So I had a problem with my, I still have it kind of, with my HomePods, one of my HomePods. It's a second gen HomePod. Mm-hmm. Where I would just randomly start playing music. And it took me a while. I was like, maybe it's just the software, maybe like some other device is triggering it or whatever. Like maybe it's dirty on top. Like, so I was like, this is weird. And I think, Jeff, you mentioned it. It's like, yeah, this seems to be a common thing. You've heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have experienced it myself on a first gen.
I asked Skippy about this. This is a common issue. Apple still hasn't acknowledged it's a problem. And if you bring it to a store, which, I mean, it's out of warranty already because it's been long enough, they will just say, well, you could fix it or like replace the touchscreen on top. And then, but that costs basically as much as a new one. So why would you do that?
Yeah.
Solution that worked for me, at least, is because it's called a ghost touch. Mm-hmm. So it kind of thinks it's getting touched and plays music, which it does usually when you touch it. So there's a software fix for that. Seems to work for most people, works for me. You go into accessibility for the HomePod in the home app.
Okay.
So settings, HomePod, select the HomePod settings, accessibility. And then there is a touch accessibility thing. And there's like three things you have to do. You have to first enable it. So assistive accessibility thing for touch. I don't know what it was called. Mm-hmm. And then there's two values that you set. It's basically the initial, I think the touch delay and the I think repeat touch or something. Set it to a value. I picked 4 seconds because that was recommended. I've read that even a second or half a second might be for most people fine. Simply set it to a value where it doesn't happen anymore and then it stops doing that. The other option would be open it up and just disconnect the touchscreen, but that seems to be a little bit much.
Okay, so turn on hold duration.
Yeah, there's the top checkbox first, and then hold duration, and the one below it. I think you have to also enable that first. Right.
Okay, so could touch accommodations, hold duration, and ignore repeat.
Yes, correct. And set them, as I said, anywhere from half a second. For me, it's 4 seconds. I set it to 4 seconds because I was like, ah, whatever. I'm never touching that thing. I have two, like, it's a stereo pair. It's, I can just touch the other one, so like, I don't even care.
All right, well, there you go. I just set it to half a second for me.
Yeah, that's, you have to try it. It might be, but it seems to be short. Short duration should be enough.
I think we have a tip for next week's show.
I think so. Yeah. So I actually do touch my HomePod top a lot to turn audio on and off. And it's, I mean, So I'm doing a Dave Ginsburg. It's within arm's reach. but I have to touch it a lot because if I have music playing from that and my phone starts ringing.
Yeah.
The HomePod will not respond to S-Lady commands at all.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Arms reach. You dare.
Yeah. So the phone rings and look at that. Huh. Phone rings and I reach over and tap the top of the HomePod.
Yeah.
And, but a half second tap, that'll be no big deal.
Yeah. As I said, you have to experiment with it and see how long it is for you. But as it, for me, it fixed it because now it's not doing it. The other recommendation I read was doing a very, very, very hard wipe of the top could sometimes fix it. Meaning like with some pressure and everything. It seems to dislodge something that triggers it. But I didn't even try that. I was like, whatever, I'll just set the touch thingy and be done with it.
I should take a photo of the top of my HomePod because it's... You know, I live in Colorado, which is an arid, actual literal arid climate. So you can dust every single day, morning and evening.
Yeah.
And there's still dust on stuff.
Yeah. It's not dust. Mine is right now, dust stream is still happening. So it's definitely not just dust. Like, but some people said, hey, I did a thorough cleaning, reboot the thing, and now it's gone. So who knows? But that's the other thing you can try. And then there's let's say hardcore version, open it up and just disconnect the cable for the touchscreen if you really don't need it. But I'm not sure I would recommend that.
The idea of replacement, cracking up in a HomePod.
Yeah. You can even buy third-party replacement touchscreens now if you want. But again, I'm like too much effort.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so, maybe eventually Apple will figure out what it is and offer like a fix or something.
Yeah, their fix will be HomePod 3.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It's like, just buy a new one.
Yeah.
To be fair, it only started recently for me. And I bought it when it came out. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Like 2 years, something like that. 3 years.
Yeah. So, and for me, it's been very intermittent. And it's on an OG HomePod that I got when the HomePod initially came out. So how old is my HomePod now? It's
should be closing in on 10 years.
Holy
something. Yeah.
So yeah, it's really been noticeable in the last couple of years where it does the ghost touch thing.
It's just, I mean, it could be a software like issue because, you know, the software hasn't really changed much. So
we'll see.
But like I said, I kept hoping a reboot or the next software update would fix it, and it just didn't.
Well, I don't expect software updates for HomePod to fix anything.
No, because there is barely any software
update. Like we talked about.
It's like all the annoying long-term bugs that you hope this time it's going to fix it. And every single time I feel like Charlie Brown running towards the football while Lucy's holding it. This time I really get to kick the football. Yeah. All right. So we do have other news things to talk about.
Yes.
And the first one is very, very obvious because who doesn't want to talk about money from the United States? And in this case, it's a commemorative $1 coin that has Steve Jobs on it. And Mm-hmm. And this is a thing that the United States Mint has been doing, and the Mint makes all the metal coins. Well, that's kind of redundant because we don't have coins that aren't metal. So anyhow, makes all the coins for the United States.
Maybe there's wooden coins.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it. Yeah, that's a thing. So this coin series, it's called American Innovation. And excuse me. And there have been others in the series. This one is Steve Jobs. And so it's Steve Jobs sitting cross-legged, and it's like a younger representation of Steve Jobs. And so the coins went on sale. It's a $1 coin, but it costs like $1.60 per coin because, you know, that's American math right there. How much should I pay for a $1 coin? $1.60.
$1.60.
And, yeah, so they went on sale. It was what, earlier this week? And yeah. Okay. Yeah. So and sold out in what? 11 minutes?
11 minutes.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're being manufactured in the two mints, Denver and crap. Where's the other one?
Philly,
China.
Thank you. Philly, China. Yeah. So Denver and Philadelphia.
That are really.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Huh. Okay. Yeah. And so to tie it back in to me, because why not? When you grow up here in the Colorado Front Range, it is a rite of passage as a public education student in elementary school to do a field trip to the Denver Mint. So, if you went to school here as a kid, you went to the Mint and did a tour of the Mint.
And had a mint.
Sadly for all of us, there was no candy at the end. But you'd think there would be.
Yeah.
You know, I ordered mine off of eBay and was a little disappointed because they were not mint. They were milk chocolate.
Oh, that is disappointing.
And they looked pretty good until you took the gold foil wrapper off of them.
That's super disappointing. I mean, for me, it would be doubly so because if I unwrapped it and found out that it wasn't like a dark chocolate mint and it was a milk chocolate, I couldn't even eat it. Yeah. I'm sorry that you had a bad eBay experience buying your Steve Jobs coin. Yeah.
I didn't. Well, no, it hasn't shipped yet.
So, but yeah, you were saying on In Touch with iOS last night that that you ordered some.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Not too high a price. It's well over value, of course. Mm-hmm.
But you know, maybe this is one of the coins that will increase in value over time, and eventually it'll be worth more than what you paid.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah. So anyhow, if you're outside the United States and you want one of these, well, it looks like you're going to be probably looking at eBay and finding someone that will ship overseas. Well, unless you're in Canada or Mexico or South America, where you don't have to go overseas to get it from the United States. Anyhow, yeah, the Steve Jobs.
Also, why would you want it? It's a different story.
Yep, got me on that one. I mean, it's, well, yeah. So, all right, well, the next story. And this one, excuse me. Is about what Apple is potentially doing with chip manufacturing partners, and just full transparency disclosure. many of the stories today came directly from Dave's In Touch with iOS show notes. Thank you, Dave, for letting us every single week crib from your show notes. So
you're welcome.
Yeah, you rock. Okay, so here's the deal on this one. Excuse me. Supposedly, Apple, and I'm saying supposedly because we don't have official confirmation from Apple, and some of the information does involve Ming-Chi Kuo, and we know how reliable he is. And if Mark Gurman were to write the same report, I'd be like, hey, look, we have two unreliable sources telling us this. It's still just as unreliable. Although in this case, it is probably very likely that that Apple is exploring working with Intel to produce M-series processors for Apple devices so that they have more than just TSMC to rely on. Yeah, see, that's a really, really great observation. Because
Intel is partnering with TSMC to get their manufacturing up to standards. So
yeah.
But yeah, it makes sense. I mean, like Apple always wants to have multiple options. And remember those days where, like, depending on like your luck, you would get a phone from with one chip or another, mm-hmm. and they would behave differently. I don't remember what it was. I think it was the cell modem or something.
Oh yeah, because there was Qualcomm and
And Intel, I think. Wasn't it even Intel? No, Intel. No.
How funny.
I don't remember. But there were
Broadcom.
At least Broadcom. Yeah, probably Broadcom and Qualcomm, something like that. Yeah. So basically, if you were lucky, you got the good one, and if you're not, then you got the bad one, and there was no way of telling.
Yeah. With the processes that they're using for Intel, it's their 18A process versus TSMC, which is N2. And there are definite differences between the processes here. And
If they net more or less the same result, it doesn't matter as much.
Yes. Like,
yeah.
And which ultimately that's what would happen here. Mm-hmm. But right now we have the big unknown, which is, can Intel actually deliver? Which would make sense that Apple is doing test runs with Intel right now. I mean, Intel does not have a good track record with this, and their not good track record isn't even very long.
Nope.
So right now, the only company that's using the 18A process chips is Intel, mm-hmm. and apparently there are concerns about yield from the wafers. So yeah, that's a big question. Can Intel produce M series chips with the 18A process that actually perform the way Apple needs and can be delivered in the yields that Apple requires?
The answer is probably no.
It's nice. Yeah, it's nice to see Apple helping out small businesses.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Small struggling companies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apple gets to say, I'm the captain now.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How
look
did,
in my
how
eyes.
The tides
I am
turned,
the captain.
Right? How the tides have turned, right? From Apple basically waiting for Intel to deliver something to Apple actually waiting for Intel to deliver something.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, huh.
It's just different now. Like, it's not an Intel chip now that they're delivering.
Yeah. I mean, now I do like the idea of diversifying your supply chain so it's not as brittle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess we'll see if Intel can actually deliver.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I have my doubts.
So do I. Okay, I'm going to move us on because I want to make sure that we do have time for this next story. And Patrice, it is the one that you brought.
Oh, and, okay.
and I read the report this morning, and I'm like, holy crap. So the super condensed version is this hacker group, like
yeah,
hacker research group. They used crap, I just forgot the name of the AI thing. Mystic? No, myth.
Yeah,
Mythos.
Mythos.
Mythos. I think it's
yes.
Mythos.
Yes.
Mythos.
You're right. Yes.
They used Mythos to aid them in locating a security flaw in the M5 processor. And yeah. So that's the short version. And Patrice, since you brought this story, do you want to tell us what happened here?
Yeah. I mean, so with the M5, Apple introduced a new process of what was it called? Memory integrity enforcement.
Yeah.
We talked about that, I think, on this show at some point. So basically, making sure that accesses to memory are safe by default through like some compiler part, and then also some like protected spaces in the chip, and so on, like a whole thing. It's like hardware and software working hand in hand. It was clear that, I mean, for sure there will be flaws somewhere, mm-hmm. because nothing is perfect. And so yeah, it took a while, or it took not that long, but they basically there were some security researchers that found a flaw using Mythos and presented it to Apple directly. So it's just interesting. Not sure how like actionable it is. I mean, they were able to exploit it, so it's not that it can't mm-hmm. be exploited. They haven't disclosed the technical details yet, which is normal, right? They're holding that back until Apple has fixed the attack vector. So I'm assuming there is a fix possible. There's a way to do that in probably software, because otherwise it would be unpatchable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's basically a kernel memory corruption that they exploited in a system that should not have kernel memory corruptions. So that's the thing. Means that until Apple fixes that, out there could be, like, if you're vulnerable to that, if there's attackers that, if you're, I don't know, you're target of some, especially state-sponsored spying or attacks, you should be careful with that, because could be exploited.
Mm-hmm.
If they figure out how. I mean, the fact that someone that we know it is possible, and that Mythos did it, will tell the right people something already, right? Because sometimes all you need to know is that it's possible and you will find it. I don't know if that's true here, but because the information is very, very vague.
Oh, yeah.
For a reason, right? For a reason.
Very vague. And you're right, for a reason. So on one hand, I'm not surprised this happened. And using Mythos. On the other hand, I'm surprised it's so fast that this popped up.
I mean, it took well, almost a year, right? Because this is in the A19. So A19 and the M5, which came out last year. So
it took them about 6 days, though, to run it through AI to find it. So although,
but it was also accident, like it was a complete accident. They were not looking for it.
And when I say this fast, I mean since Mythos was introduced, discovering this flaw, that time frame was pretty fast.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, that's where the AI really, really shines. Like once you figure out there is something, to figure out a way to exploit it is usually faster than.
Yeah.
So they found the bug on April 25th. Yeah. And built the tooling, and on May 1st they had a working exploit. So. The exploit is a data-only kernel local privilege escalation chain. Yeah, okay. So that is kind of where this comes in, and where Apple can patch it, because if it's local privilege, then you can maybe it starts from an unprivileged local user and ends up with a root shell. So yeah, it's as I said, it is quite interesting. There's a video if you're interested. But it will get fixed probably rather quickly. But there will also be eventually they have a 55-page report. I don't know if they will ship the entire report or not, but we'll see.
Yeah. And they're saying they're not going to release the report until after Apple has rolled out their security patch.
Yep. Yeah, which is pretty normal. Like for any kind of security research, there's like a, how's it called? I always forget. There's a word for it. Something disclosure. I always forget what it's called. Embargo? But basically, no. There's like this. I'm just blanking on it. But it's basically like at least the good guys, the security researchers, will hold it back. Give the company a reasonable chance to fix it, and before they publish it, they might eventually do it because, if a company doesn't respond, then eventually they're like, okay, fuck it, others will figure. That's true. Like at some point, there have been cases where you needed the public pressure for the company to actually move. Right. Not so much with Apple, I think. At least nothing comes to mind, but like, or I think it was Oracle maybe, or some other company like that, where they had that problem where they just weren't interested or didn't think it was a big deal. And then eventually it got disclosed and they were just dragging their feet on fixing it, and it got disclosed, and then they were really quick to fix it. So
do you think it's already been fixed? Because it's the article targets macOS 26.4.1.
I don't know, but I don't think so, because I mean the article just came out yesterday, so they had the meeting with Apple earlier that week, according to the article.
So it's been hanging around through various versions of 26 at this point.
Well, I mean, they figured it out end of April, beginning of May. So it's been, let's say, 2 weeks. It's not that long. 26.4.1 was the latest version, like beginning of the month.
Yeah, and I have not looked at the security release notes that Apple rolls out to go along with updates.
Yeah.
And those are very nicely detailed.
Yes. Yes.
So when this is patched, it will absolutely be in the security release notes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm also sure that this company will then also talk about it, like once they can. But said it's an interesting approach. We'll see more of that. I think that's the thing. I mean, Apple has, well, the deepest pockets right now, but also one of the best security teams in the world right now. Mm-hmm. If not the best, but at least one of the best. You see it in all the papers they publish and all the stuff. Like there's a lot of security papers and they're very, very good. At least from what I can see, they're one of the best teams. So finding things like that is, and Apple invites it, right? I mean, they always security researchers get more access to phones than anybody else. They get more access to the software than anybody else. They get access to the, what was it called? secure compute, right? No, private cloud compute images, for example, to review them and make sure that they're secure and Apple does what they claim they do and all of that. So Apple is not just has a very, very good security team. They're also very public about it.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, they publish literally scientific papers and all of that. And even then, people find exploits. Good people, bad people, everybody. Like mm-hmm. they do their best and they're very, very good. But even then, it's simply impossible. So this is a big deal. Especially in a system that they just released that was supposedly trying to prevent exactly that thing.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it is humans. It's not a hardware issue, apparently. It's humans implementing things, and with all the reviews and everything, there's still potential for mistakes.
Yep.
Yeah. Or oversights. It might not even be a mistake. It might just be an oversight, like something they didn't see coming.
Yeah. So a big thing in all of this for me is seeing how something that's been going on in the artificial intelligence space for quite a while now is suddenly very publicly visible. And that's how AI is used in security.
Yeah.
And so behind the scenes for years, it's been this thing where, hey, you know, if you have enterprise level systems and you're not using AI tools to aid with security for all of that, you're screwed because the bad guys already are using AI.
Yes,
and so you have this this AI battle between security and hacking. And and so now Mythos brings that out into the forefront for the general public, because
for the general public,
for the general public, because now the average user can see what's been happening for years already, but from
not yet. This is the preview version that they got access to. Not everybody has access to
that. Not everybody has access to it, but everybody now gets to see what's been happening. Is what I mean.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. In the security industry, like especially bigger companies, whatever, they've been using any kind of AI, not necessarily LLMs, but any kind of AI for their signals intelligence to detect patterns in I don't know, network traffic and user behavior, or like attack, like user behavior to detect like abnormal behavior that could be an attacker and all of that. That's been going on for quite a long time already.
Yeah. And I can guarantee, without any insider information, and Patrice and Dave, neither of you actually respond to this, because I don't want to put you in a position where you're talking about insider information. But I can guarantee, without any insider information, that the companies that Patrice and Dave work for are using some sort of artificial intelligence assistance in their security, whether and that could be like everything that's on the network. It could be everything that's cloud-based, which could be data and services. But somewhere in that mix, there's going to be some sort of AI tools that are assisting with security. And
I think it's not a secret. Every bigger company is doing that.
Right. But I just didn't want to put either of you in a position where it's like, you said something, and then it's like, oh crap, well, based on our contracts, we can't actually talk about that. And anyhow, so yeah.
To be fair, I wouldn't even know, because that's not the area I work in. So
All right.
And you know, that's for the best.
All I know is we have people for that.
Right. You have people for that. Dave has people for that. And Marty,
there's a guy you got to talk to who will talk to a guy.
That's right.
Exactly.
And you go down the alley and say, yeah, Vinny sent me. What's my thing with using Vinny as a name this week?
I don't know. You have a thing for Vinny, I guess.
Just this week. Yeah. Anyhow, Patrice, thank you for finding that story and bringing it. And I'm sure, Dave, the only reason this wasn't in the In Touch with Iowa show notes for this week is because all of this dropped after recording was already happening.
Yeah. Right.
Just came out.
Yeah. So, yeah. Wow, we still have to get to cool things. So I think that means it's really important that right now that I tell everyone that Odd Technologies is here supporting the British Tech Network to make sure that we can live stream shows every week, that we have a website for you to go and check out all the episodes and find your favorites so you can watch or listen over and over, and which also means there needs to be a place for show files to live so you can get to those recordings. And all of that takes a lot of resources, and without Odd Technologies' help, having those resources here would be really, really difficult. And we just wouldn't be able to do everything that we do for you. So we do really appreciate that Odd Technologies is here and supporting us. And so thank you for that. Now, all of you, the way you can show your support for Odd Technologies is to go check out their website. And if you need to have the resources to be able to do remote monitoring for a location, they've got your back. They can set up the cameras and the other remote monitoring gear that you need. If that's not something that falls under what you need to do for whatever, well, still check it out because Ewan did all the photography and it's great photography. So, you know, go check it out. So thank you to Odd Technologies, that website, so you can go check it out and see Ewan's photos. awetechnologies.co.uk, awetechnologies.co.uk. So thanks, Odd Technologies. And we've been talking about the live chat off and on. And Patrice, do you mind telling people about that? Or are you like so burned out that either I need to do it or I need to put like Marty on the spot and see if he can make it happen?
No, I'm good. I can do it. Not a problem. Yeah, we have a really cool live stream system, independent from all the big platforms out there. It is available for your pleasure at live.britishtechnetwork.com. And all you do is you go there when we record every Friday, 4 p.m. UK time. Well, today it was 4:30, but usually it's 4 p.m. UK time for this very show. And also every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, where we talk about, for example, chip design, like always interesting stories, or how the Artemis II flight computers are designed, which is super interesting. Yeah, really interesting chips that they have. Also very old chips. They're like 20 years old or something. Yeah, so that's how easy it is. There's a video on the left, chat on the right, start typing. That's really all of it. Or it is, and we throw all the links to interesting stories, add-on stories, things we talk about, cool things, all of that in the chat. If you want to get to the links later, or you are listening to this in the recorded form, in your favorite podcast player of choice, then not a problem, or on a website, for example. There is a transcript, britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Wow, I went back like 7 years or something.
Yeah.
britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Pick in the calendar today's date, which would be May 15th, 2026. It's always Friday, so it's quite easy. And if you do that, you will see everything we talked about in the chat.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that. And I know it's been a while since you set all this up, but it doesn't stop me from saying thank you for putting in all the hard work to modernize our live stream and live chat. So with that, okay, now we'll do cool things. And Dave, it looks like you have the first one.
Yep. Hopefully I didn't show this before, but if I did, well, you're finding out about it again. This is made by Satechi. They just came out with this not too long ago, maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's the Dot Disk 80 gigabyte M.2 NVMe solid state enclosure. It's aluminum enclosure, so it's real high quality. It's this little guy like here on my camera here. It's
so tiny.
It's like the tiniest thing I've ever seen, because all the ones I have are like slightly bigger and really nice. Comes in two colors, silver or black, and I got the silver. Very, very high speed. I'm very impressed with it. It's at the USB 4.0 and I think it's 3.2, 4.0 speeds, but at 80 gigabyte speeds, that's pretty nice. But the nice thing about it is it's so compact. It is a little pricey, but they have deals now. Right now, I believe this is on Amazon. The price was at $199. It's now down $40 off, so it's at $159. And it's good quality. I think for somebody I put a 4 terabyte drive in this one, and it's really nice to have, and it takes up so much less space. Especially I have all these old SSD drives that the full size. So that, mm-hmm. which will always take up a lot of space. This is very, very compact, but I'm hoping to see these kind of devices that will be a little lesser price. But yeah, it's not bad a little day. And like I said, Satechi makes great products. They really
do. All right. Very cool. Marty, it is your turn.
Okay, for all you folks who are pining away for Ted Lasso and how we can't wait for the next season to start and how great the show is, shame on you if you have not seen Rooster. Yes. Rooster is another Bill Lawrence production with Matt Tarsis, and it stars Steve Carell. And Carell plays a different kind, usually he's playing characters that are, well, pretty similar. Basically styled off The Office. This is a much different character that he plays in here. The setting is a small liberal arts college, and he is asked, he writes basically pulp fiction, stories of his imaginary character that he has, Rooster, that solves crimes and saves the woman and does all the kind of action pulp kind of stuff. Well, he's asked to go to this small college to guest lecture, and it happens to also be a college where his daughter is teaching at. So there's kind of a family connection with it. I'm in academia. I'm at a larger college than what Ludlow College is portrayed to be in this, but I'm surrounded by small private colleges. And this is, even if you're not an academic, if you're an academic, you'll get it. If you've been to college, you'll get it. But there are a bunch of rich characters in this show. They just completed season one. And I'm like, oh no, what if there's not a season two? So sure enough, I Googled it, and there is an extensive article by IGN on season two release that it has been picked up, and it was picked up pretty quickly because of the popularity of the show. And they should have, so they just finished season one or released it. They should have season two done by the end of the year with early spring release. So it's not one of these things you're going to have to wait 2 years or forever to get another season out of it. Nice. There are some great actors in this. Connie Britton's in it. Apparently and I don't want to do spoilers. The article, if you Google and look for the IGN article about season two, there are some spoilers in it. But if you love the show, the spoilers won't stop you. So you've got, Steve Carell, Danielle Deadweiler, Phil Dunster from Ted Lasso plays a pretty self-centered English professor who studies Soviet history and produces stuff on Soviet history. John C. McGinley, who, of course, was from Scrubs and is absolutely hilarious in this. He's kind of a hippie-esque college president who spends a lot of time in in his hot tub between, or not his hot tub, his steam bath and his ice tub, and does most of his meetings in there too. It is really, it's a fun show to watch. You can now do all the season of season one and not feel like you're going to have to wait a long time for season two. So shame on you if you're a Ted Lasso fan and you haven't pursued this Bill Lawrence again, another great show storyline with it too.
Excuse me. Nice. I guess I better add that to my watch list.
No, yes, push it up onto the top of your watch list.
All right. I'll move it up the watch list. Cool. All right. So Patrice, do you have a cool thing?
I do. I do have a cool thing. Did I post it? Did I forget? I forgot.
I forgot.
Okay. Yeah, I have a cool thing. It is Kagi. Engine. I threw in the link from Gruber, who posted in Daring Fireball earlier this week, actually, about this. After a year later, he's like, what was the title? Seriously, give Kagi a try. And I took that as a reason. I've been a member since September 2023. So been a while. It's a paid search engine. It's not that expensive. There's a free tier if you want. Like you can have a low amount to try it. Like low amount of searches. The base layer is not that expensive. The advantage of Kagi is no ads and really, really good search results. Because they have they use some other indexes here or there as well, but they do have their own index. And therefore, their whole sole focus is on providing really, really good privacy-first search. So, set no identification, no ads. The interface is simple enough. I have to say, I just got access to the search API, so I'm going to play with that. It's still in private beta, but that's coming. So if you want to connect it to your AI agent or whatever, you will be able to do that or build an app on top of that. They don't have an iOS app yet, but there's a plugin for Safari for your favorite browser that you can use that will then use, like basically put it in as a like default search engine. And there's an Orion browser, which is WebKit based from them, which then also has Kagi built in, but you also can use other search engines, like they don't block you anywhere. But it's just a really good search engine. I have to say one thing, I use their assistant feature, which is the ChatGPT / Perplexity / whatever feature that they have. They call it assistant. It works really well, like I have to say. Does it have all the features that the others do? I don't think so. But what it does super well. And that's the thing I like about Kagi. It is no frills. It is simple. It is not stupid expensive. I think I pay now. I ultimately upgraded to the ultimate plan, I think, which was $25 a month or something. But I get all the features, all the models, and I think $25 worth of AI credits and so on. So I don't even need that. So it replaced Perplexity for me, which they annoyed me. So I canceled the subscription with them and went with Kagi. So highly, highly, highly recommended. I would say, I mean, search is one of the most important things you do, and you should really be paying for it.
I'm playing around with it. And they do have an add-in, a Kagi search add-in for Firefox too.
Yes, they do. All the platforms that you need. What I really also like is their customizability. Like they call them lenses where you can say, I'm searching if whatever I want to have in this context, I want to use these pages, for example, or look for financial pages only or whatever. And you can like they have a pretty good set of defaults, but if you want, you can define your own lens and basically tailor your search. They also have a very easy, kind of a bag, like you can kind of control a little bit the search engine, and there's a way to say, please search this in Google, like it's just like exclamation mark G and then like put it in, or exclamation mark R for Reddit or whatever. So if you ever needed to jump off Kagi because it's not doing what you want, it's super easy to do that from there. Like, I mean, yes, you could also just open Google, but you can literally just type in exclamation mark G and whatever, and they will take care of that. So they're very, very nice company. There was an interview like a couple of months ago that was really interesting. So I recommend it. Give it a try.
And I've been playing with it as well, and I've been very pleased with the search results I get.
Yeah. Quality-wise, for me at least, the results are much better than DuckDuckGo or Google.
And yeah, I gave up on DuckDuckGo search a while ago.
Yes, me too. Yeah. That's how I ended up with Kagi, because it just started annoying me. Google was already annoying me for a long time, and then DuckDuckGo did the same thing, and I was like, okay, I need something else. And they came around.
Nice. All right, so then that means I'm up next. And full disclosure, I'm doing a shameless plug because Brian Chaffin and I, we do the Context Machine, and we have merch now, and check it out. Woo! So this is quite literally the very first piece of merch from our store, because after I got everything set up, of course, I had to test and make sure it was going to work. And so I ordered one of our mugs, and I think
Cafe Express.
No, we're actually using Printify.
Oh, okay. I'll have to check that out.
So yeah. And So how much does a mug cost? I forgot what I priced it at. A mug is $11.99. And because not everyone's into blue for like the handle and the inside, I did set it up so you can choose other colors, but the logo will stay blue. And so I now have a Context Machine mug, and you can too. And there's other merch there too. Once that runs through the dishwasher, I'm going to do a taste test, because I've been saying everything's tastes better in a retro rewatch mug, and so now I have the retro rewatch mug, and I have the Pod Talk mug, and now I have a Context Machine mug, and
In Touch with iOS is coming.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to line them all up and do taste tests and see which one tastes better. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm going to put a shot of whiskey in a bunch of mugs, and I expect that the quality of flavor in the mugs will improve as I go down the line, because after each drink, just everything tastes better than the drink before, right? That's how it works.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyhow, there you go. Context Machine merch. All right. It is time to wrap up. So I know the routine. The first part of wrapping up is me saying, Marty, where can people find you?
Oh, just Jencius, my last name, Jencius, on all of the socials. Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, the Neo Notebook, where with Dave and with Eric and with Brett, we cover the news around the new Neo Notebook. Monday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find us on YouTube for Vision Profiles, everything about AR, VR, and the Apple Vision headset. Tuesday nights with Chuck on Mac Voices. Thursday nights with Dave on In Touch with iOS. And then Friday mornings here when I really just need to have a good time and just enjoy it. So check out all of the podcasts that are available through the podtalk.net. That's my site with the branding.
Awesome. All right. And Dave, how about you? Where can people find you?
Well, you can find me at In Touch with iOS, intouchwithios.com, YouTube channel, youtube.com/intouchwithios. Like I'm already mentioned a few shows I'm on with him and others, the Neo Notebook, Sunday nights. We have a blast doing that. And there's the constant news about the the MacBook Neo. So we have a lot of fun on that one. Vision Profiles on Mondays with Marty Eric. Tuesday nights, Mac Voices Live with Chuck Joyner and the crew. Thursdays, we record In Touch with iOS. Fridays here. And you could find me on Blue Sky and Mastodon, DaveG65.
Awesome. All right, Patrice, your turn. Where can people find you?
Well, every week here on the Mac Show on Fridays, the Big Show on Thursdays. Everything I'm doing, social media links, podcasts, projects, cool things, literally everything on my website, thepatrice.com, will take you there. And with a certain Jeff Gamet, I am on Retro Rewatch. We rewatch retro TV shows and then we talk about it. We're still working our way through Stargate SG-1. And yeah, the episode that comes out tonight will be cursed. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Yes. And I have Chuck lined up, so it's ready whenever you want.
Yes. We will talk about that in a second after the show.
Yeah. Yeah. all right. So for me, well, I'm going to mix it up a little bit and say, holy forking shirtballs, people. I brought my blogs back to life. So jeffgamet.com, that's where I'm writing about generally tech-related things. And Fresh Brewed Tales, where I write about the things that I see people do in coffee shops. And then for social media, jgamet on pretty much everything. And mostly, though, right now on Mastodon, PixelFed, and Blue Sky. And then here we go with the shows. Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Thursdays on Dave's In Touch with iOS. Here on the British Tech Network for the Big Show and the Mac Show. Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine, which now has merch and a newsletter. And as Patrice pointed out, we do Retro Rewatch with our cool little mugs. And I think that's all the stuff. Although this week, Charlotte Henry did have me on her show to talk about AI in entertainment industry and in creative industries as a whole, and that was a lot of fun. So, all right, now we got all that stuff out of the way, so I can get to the really important thing, which is where I say thank you to the three of you. For being here, but more importantly, for just being wonderful people and being my friends. You're awesome and I love you and you're just fantastic people. Man. So seriously, I am so glad we're all friends. And I feel like since three of us are going to be at MacStock in July, so that's me and Dave and Marty, and we are all speaking at MacStock, Patrice, since you can't be there, we now need to convince Mike Potter to do Mac Stock Europe.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Yeah. And then we can all be together and it will be glorious.
Yeah. We need to figure out a way to bring Patrice into a show remotely or if we're going to record shows cool there. Yeah.
Well, we have the technology to make that happen.
We do.
Yep.
We have to arrange it on our own, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll figure. We're smart people. We can make stuff happen.
We could.
Yeah.
Are we smart people?
We're clever people.
Okay.
Yeah. So seriously, thank you to the three of you for just being awesome. And hey, everyone that's watching and listening live, participating in the live chat, thank you to all of you for being here and being part of this. If you're listening and watching to the show recordings later, thank you as well. Just, it doesn't matter if you're time shifted, you're still part of the family. Ewan, thanks for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure there are people for shows. And Odd Technologies, thank you for being here to support us. All right, everyone. So don't forget to come back next Thursday for the Big Show and then again on Friday for the Mac Show. And I hope all of you just have a fantastic weekend.